On today's episode of the 10-12 podcast, of course, we're going to talk about conference realignment, what we're hearing as far as when Arizona, Arizona State, and Utah could be in the Big 12. Then Levi Stevenson of Wide Right Natty Light joins us to talk about Hunter Deckers and the gambling investigation. And finally, two fantastic guests are going to join us for our offensive line rankings, Big 12 offensive line rankings pod today.
It's done.
Connor McDavid! It's not real!
The goal of the year.
Panarin!
Part of the past. The celebrations. Forgotten. The history.
Vegas Golden Knights!
History.
Win.
We're back to a blank slate. Clean ice. All that matters now is what happens next. The Stanley Cup Playoffs.
Eastern Conference Final begins Wednesday.
I'm Alex Rodriguez.
And I'm Jason Kelly.
From Bloomberg, this is The Deal. Each week, you'll hear us in conversation with business icons.
This show will explore deal-making across sports, media, and entertainment.
That is a harsh lesson in business.
Sports is not as simple as bringing a bunch of big names together.
I didn't want to do another stomp you out speech.
It opened up so many more doors.
The show is called The Deal.
Listen to The Deal.
Listen to The Deal on Spotify.
At Evernorth Health Services, we believe costs shouldn't get in the way of life-changing care. And we're doing everything in our power to make it possible. Behavioral health solutions that also keep your projections at their best? It's possible. Pharmacy benefits that benefit your bottom line? It's possible. Complex specialty care that cares about your ROI? It's possible. Because we're already doing it. All while saving businesses billions. That's Wonder made possible. Learn more at evernorth.com/wonder.
Welcome to the 10-12, the podcast that covers all 14 teams in the Big 12 Conference, plus Colorado and soon probably Arizona, Arizona State, and a 16th team to be named later. We are the flagship show of the 10-12 Network. You can find every show on the network at 1012network.com, T-E-N, the number 12, the word network, and partners with Sports Social, the biggest and best podcast network in the U.K., I am your host, Philip Slavin. Thank you for joining us today. I assume now that you have clicked play on this episode, you've seen how long it's going to be. It's not my fault that the college sports content machine is just going brrr and cranking it out nonstop. I considered pushing our offensive line rankings to another episode, but I've got so much on the docket and so much lined up and so much planned between now and when the Big 12 2023 season actually kicks off that it's just I have no other opportunity. Let's just get it out there. Let's get it done. Let's talk some actual football because, folks, college football is officially here. Fall camp kicked off for Big 12 teams on Wednesday. It's football season. We got to talk ball. So excited for our offensive line rankings, the first of our position group ranking episodes. Of course, we also have to dive into the Hunter Deckers news. At Iowa State, Levi Stevenson is going to join us for that. We're going to kick off this show talking about, I don't know if you've heard about it, but realignment is going strong. Realignment still going. Yes, Colorado is part of the Big 12, but they are not going to be the last addition, most likely. Now, I just want to say this. What is happening right now is not really realignment. We're going to keep calling it realignment. It's not realignment. It's consolidation. It's picking the last remaining good items at the closeout sale before the store shuts its doors forever. Big 12 going after what they want. Big 10 looking at a good deal. A couple of Pac-12 schools. The Big 10 stuff is hilarious to me. But also I get why they're saying what they're saying. So obviously the reports now is the Big 10 has been meeting to discuss expansion with some Pac-12 schools. Oregon and Washington, the two names banded about the most. Stanford and Cal also mentioned. Nicole Auerbach, who's been covering this now at NBC Sports, posted on Twitter, quote, "I know people have rolled their eyes at this, but I do not believe the Big Ten wants to be the one to deliver the final blow to the Pac-12. So I expect they'll monitor what happens with the Big 12 first. Dominoes would need to fall there first to act." Legally, they have to say that. No, I actually think that the reason that they are saying that is because they want other dominoes to fall first, which puts those teams like Oregon and Washington into such a situation where they will take whatever they can get from the Big Ten just to get to the Big Ten. But I also understand the joke of that's like getting cancer, then blaming the cold for killing you. Like, no, you died because you had cancer. The Big Ten in this scenario is the cancer. They took USC and UCLA. They basically kneecapped the Pac-12 and are now saying, well, I didn't want to shoot it in the head. We just wanted to maim it and leave it in the desert. And, you know, nature will do the rest of the work for us. It is what it is. Shout out to Jason Shear. I don't think anyone has done a better job and right now deserves a bigger victory lap than Jason Shear, who covers Arizona at 247. I'm going to read a few bits from his article that he put out, kind of summing up where everything stands. Now, this is, of course, is covered by 247, so I'm not going to read all of this. You need to be a subscriber to 247 to read it, but, I mean, look, Shear's been the most accurate with all this stuff, despite what some who cover the Pac-12 and Zano might want you to believe. It's looking more and more and more like Arizona and Arizona State will join the Big 12. Their Board of Regents have a meeting now scheduled for Thursday night. If you remember kind of how it went with Colorado, they had a meeting, and then the Big 12 had a meeting, and then Colorado had a meeting, and then we were all done. So Arizona and Arizona State, they share a Board of Regents, will have a meeting Thursday night. I would expect that the Big 12 will have a meeting soon. We can get all this, start getting all this kind of wrapped up. The belief is that there's a lot of stuff going on out there, but that the Big 12 will wait to make any formal offers slash announcements until they have whatever schools they're going to add set and ready to go, and then announce them all at once and not do, well, here's Arizona, and now Arizona State, and now insert 16th school, whether it be Utah, most likely, Oregon, not very likely. I'm going to read this from Shear. This is after the meeting with George Kliavkov. Essentially, after the school presidents were presented the numbers, it's around $24.5 million on the high end. Once the meeting was completed with disappointment, all bets were off. Schools such as Arizona, Utah, and Arizona State entered discussions with the Big 12. Arizona was the furthest along of the three going into this part of the process, and in the last 24 to 48 hours, Arizona and State and Utah joined the Wildcats. Although it is not completely finalized yet, there are some rumors that waiting for Oregon to see if they're going to just flat out say no. Sources indicate that Arizona, Arizona State, and Utah are all likely to join the Big 12. One source said that it would have to fall apart for the three schools not to make the move, and the ideal plan for the Big 12 is to make the biggest possible impact, which is announcing all three at once. Although it is not set in stone, there could be an announcement as soon as Friday. This is getting done before the season kicks off, which is good because I'd like to just focus on the season once the season starts. He does have more comments here about Utah. Obviously, it's the fan base who's been the biggest a-holes about all of this, and the administration that's been the most stubborn about not joining the Big 12 and staying in the Pac-12. I'm of the opinion that I'm perfectly fine if we choose somebody other than them. Arizona President Robert Robbins deserves a ton of credit in this process, as he has been vocal and active in talking to his counterparts. There was clear hesitancy with Arizona State and Utah, but Robbins has been consistent in what he wanted to see from the Pac-12, and his expectations were never matched. Robbins kept an open dialogue with the Four Corner schools and has laid out the positives of making a move to the Big 12. I'm not even going to get to the ACC stuff. I'm not going to, because there's no way in hell. No, it's not. I don't see how Florida State gets out of that grant of rights. I don't. So unless they're going to be paying out the nose to be in a different conference, I don't know how it's going to happen right now. I don't. So as far as the Big 12 and the Pac-12 and the Big 10 go, it seems very likely that the rest of the Corner Four, Colorado's already joining the Big 12, Arizona, Arizona State, and Utah now remaining, will join the Big 12 in the summer of 24. And the Big Ten will then pick over whatever parts it wants left of the Pac-12 at a discount price. That's what it seems like. This ball is moving quick. It's moving fast. And I think it'll be done before the season kicks off. And honestly, like, that is what we need. We need to just be able to talk about football. I don't want to be talking about this when there are football games on my television. I just want to watch football and talk about football. Because This is great for engagement. This is great for clicks. It's great for downloads. And it's all very interesting stuff. But I'm a little bit tired of it. One thing I am not tired of are the incredible and unique hats from laststandhats.com. If you're a Texas, TCU, Texas Tech, or Oklahoma State fan, they have a unique and awesome hat for you that you are going to want on your head this college football season. Or heck, soccer starts on the 17th. First real games of the Big 12 soccer season are on August 17th. So maybe you want to go to a soccer game and have on your hat on your head. Cowgirls are actually going to be playing about 2 hours from my home on a Sunday afternoon. It looks like we're going to early service so I can take the two big girls to go watch. And I will probably have a Last Stand Hats, Oklahoma State hat, on my head when I go to watch them play. So if you want to be like me and have a hat on your head, that makes people go, that's really nice. Where'd you get that from? You say, I got it from laststandhats.com. I use the promo code NETWORK12, NETWORK12, and I got 10% off my purchase. NETWORK12, NETWORK12, gets you 10% off your purchase at laststandhats.com. Make your head happy this college football and soccer season. All right. Lots to get to. Levi Stevenson of Wide Right, Natty Lights, talk about Hunter Deckers and the impact for Iowa State. Ian Boyd of InsideTexas.com. Max Chadwick of Pro Football Focus. We're doing offensive line rankings in the Big 12. It's one of my favorite episodes of the year. Let's get to it. There's so much going on. The season is almost here. And while we'd like to talk about realignment and we'd like to talk about football on the field, we have to take a moment to talk about, honestly, the biggest story in the Big 12 right now, and that is we now know names of players at Iowa State in relation to the gambling investigation. One of those is, of course, Iowa State's starting quarterback for last season, Hunter Deckers, joining me to talk about the situation, what it means for Iowa State, and just a few things looking forward. Levi Stevenson of Wide Right, Natty Light. Levi, usually I have you on for more fun conversations. This is going to be an interesting one.
Yeah. Yeah. It's just kind of one of those things. This is genuinely the most unpleasant offseason I've ever had to deal with, you know, being at the helm of Wide Right. This is my sixth year now doing this. And this is easily the worst offseason by far, like not even close. It's been miserable because we knew this stuff was coming at some point back in May, and we just had to sit on it all summer. You know, because we, you know, making appearances on podcasts for season previews and stuff like that, I say like, well, Hunter Deckers could take a step forward, and you know, we have to kind of stay quiet. It's like, he might not be playing, but you can't actually say that because the investigation's not out. We don't, you know, it's not official or anything like that. So you can't actually say Hunter Deckers is going to be involved in this gambling thing until he actually officially is, which now he is. So, you know, the cat's out of the bag. But it was funny though, because like, it wasn't just like, you know, it wasn't reporters and people in the know that are normally in the know that knew about this. Like people, like everybody knew, like some, like everybody I know that follows college football or follows the Big 12 at all, like had heard that Hunter Deckers was involved with this. It was like the worst kept secret of all time. Which is really, really interesting for something like this that has actual legal ramifications. And it was an investigation that took, you know, at least a couple months and probably is not anywhere all that close to being over, I don't think.
No, I agree. For those who don't know details, they're at the Story County Attorney's Office. This was reported originally by Travis Hines of the Des Moines Register. The Story County Attorney's Office has filed a complaint against Iowa State quarterback Hunter Deckers, charging him with tampering with records related to the Iowa Division of Criminal Investigations probe into sports gambling. Deckers is accused of placing 26 wagers on Iowa State sporting events, including the 2021 football game against Oklahoma State when he was a sophomore backup quarterback. That is according to the complaint filed. Deckers did not play in that game. The complaint alleges the DraftKings account controlled by Deckers completed approximately 366 mobile online sports wagers totaling more than about $2,800. Deckers, of course, started all 12 games last season. If he is found guilty, he will face permanent loss of eligibility under NCAA guidelines. Look, the gambling, we made a lot of jokes about this. A lot of people have been making jokes about this investigation, haha, players gambling, pointing out some of the slight hypocrisy of, like, gambling is a big deal. It's advertised all over ESPN and during games, and yet players aren't allowed to. But I mean, the general consensus in all the sports and across all the sports is you don't bet on the game that you play, and you sure as hell don't bet on the team you are on. So while it was light and funny before, now we've got a quarterback who not only bet on Iowa State sporting events, he bet on a game where he was an active player. And while he didn't see the field as the backup to Brock Purdy, had Brock Purdy gone down in what was a very, very physical game against Oklahoma State in 2021, there's a chance Hunter Deckers would have played in the game that he actually bet in. So, like, this is not some little light, ha-ha funny thing anymore. This is a very serious situation for Hunter Deckers.
Yeah, I mean, Pete Rose is one of the greatest baseball players ever, and he can't step foot in the Hall of Fame because he did exactly what Hunter Deckers did. Like, he's an extraordinarily famous example of why you don't bet on your own team. And Hunter did it. I mean, in the end, there's a few different layers to this because, you know, the gambling probe came out. They had pretty specific numbers on number of bets and total bets wagered and stuff like that. The tampering thing is involved with that the account he was using to place the bets had his parents' names on it. So he was, you know, quote unquote, sharing an account with his parents. And Hunter Decker's attorney released a big statement saying, you know, as big as this whole statement, but it was a genuinely really awful, awful legal statement if you're trying to get your client, if you're trying to get anyone to believe your client was innocent, because in this legal statement, it said he was, you know, that they were, I mean, it functionally or actually did legitimately admitted that Hunter was sharing a gambling account with his parents. Like, and they said, like, they're investigating him for the crime of sharing an account with his parents. So, wait a second here. You just admitted that he was sharing a gambling account with his parents, which is the whole problem to begin with, because most of these bets were placed in 2021. When he placed a bet on the Oklahoma State Iowa State game, he was not 21. He wasn't even old enough to place a bet in the first place. So there's underage betting. His parents were helping him, and then his lawyer just screwed him by essentially admitting that he was using a gambling account owned by his parents. So there's that. Just a tremendously brainless, mindless thing to do, just for anybody, but especially if you're a quarterback that just based off of pure talent and potential had an NFL future ahead of him. And now it's functionally done. I mean, if he loses his NCAA, eligibility, he's going to have to play at Morningside or Sioux Center. He's going to have to go play some little NAIA college someplace, and he's never going to have anything happen there. But the, like you mentioned before too, the gambling, haha, we kind of make jokes about it because everybody gambles, and it's just kind of, it's the, and actually you'll never hear me say this again, but Kirk Ferentz made a really good point in his press conference the other day, is that Iowa and Iowa State are the ones being investigated for it. But if anybody's going to pretend like this isn't a nationwide thing, that players all across the country aren't betting on stuff, if anybody's pretending like this, I mean, that's not how this works. What's really kind of fishy about this whole thing is that Iowa and Iowa State were the only two schools investigated by the Iowa Gaming Commission. Northern Iowa was not included. Simpson College, another NCAA university, was not included. You know, UNI is still part of the same board of regents as Iowa and Iowa State, but they didn't investigate anybody. UNI, they only investigated Iowa and Iowa State. And why is that? Well, they're the two Power Five football. They're the two, by far, the two highest profile programs in the state. And they can use that to make an example out of them. And if you were actually trying to solve an issue of underage gambling or athletes gambling on sports in Iowa, if you were actually trying to do that, you would investigate every single university in the state of Iowa, every single one, from Iowa State and Iowa all the way down to Loras College and Clark University in Dubuque. You would go all the way down. But they're not. So somebody's trying to make an example out of somebody. And it's very annoying. Now, that does not change the fact that they found that Hunter Deckers bet on Iowa State football. He did that. He still did that. I mean, whether or not the investigation was stupid or flawed in the first place doesn't change what they found. And in the end, Hunter Deckers made a profoundly stupid decision that he's going to have to live with. And his lawyer probably just screwed him out of any chance of getting, you know, of making out of this somewhat clean. And I mean, As far as I'm concerned, I mean, there's no chance he plays for Iowa State in 2023. No chance. And I would be blown away if he's not completely done and gone.
Yeah, I mean, that seems likely. To your point, some more quotes from the attorney statement. Quote, this charge attempts to criminalize a daily fact of American life. Millions of people share online accounts of all kinds every day. The investigation at the Iowa universities is the tip of an iceberg. Thousands and thousands of college athletes place bets, usually very small ones, with shared accounts. This is for the schools and the NCAA to police. Your argument is that, well, everybody does it, and it's not fair that my client got caught. And so, like, look, I'm not disagreeing with the, if we did this all over the place, we'd find all sorts of things. It's the same thing as when we would talk about, like, well, this so-and-so school is paying players to come there. If we did this investigation everywhere, like, we'd find it all sorts of things. But yeah, you're the one who got caught. And so while that's not fair that other people didn't get caught, you still broke the rules and you still got caught. Like, lots of people break.
It doesn't change the fact that you broke the law.
Correct.
Period.
Correct. And so, like, people do things all the time. Some get caught, some don't. That's unfair, but that's just how life works. If you're going to break the law, you've put at risk the chance that you are going to
get
caught.
But the first sentence you read said, They're trying to criminalize sharing accounts. Well, the only account in question here is the gambling account, which means that you just admitted that your client shared a gambling account,
yes,
which is the crux of the entire issue. You're a bad lawyer. You are just a bad, bad attorney. The Deckers family wasted a bunch of money on that. And honestly, if his parents were enabling him to do any of this, then shame on them.
Yes.
I mean, they allowed their kid to ruin his career or whatever. And it's just blown away. Sorry, I didn't mean to drop an F on your podcast, but it's, you know, it's just a mind-bogglingly stupid situation, and Hunter Deckers is going to have to deal with it. He's going to have to, you know, he's just going to have to move on and either be done with football or play at some NAIA school and be fine with never doing anything after that. And Iowa State's going to have to move on, and that's what it is. I mean, I think because we knew he was going to be involved with months ago, that's why they added that JUCO quarterback in June, and then they've been preparing Rocco and JJ one of those two is going to start, and I would assume it's going to be Rocco.
So, like, as you mentioned, looking forward, there was also a backup offensive lineman who was named in this investigation as well. And as you mentioned, Iowa State added Butte College quarterback Tanner Hughes to their roster. Iowa State's known this has been coming for a while. You and I have talked about this. I mean, every national podcast, when people talk about Iowa State and projecting the season, have hint, hint, nudge, nudge, wink, winked about something was going to come out. I mean, this, as you said, this is the worst kept secret in college football. That something was coming with Hunter Deckers. So Iowa State has had plenty of time to prepare for this situation. So looking at this, how do you think this impacts Iowa State this coming season? Is this they've had time, so it's not going to be as big of a blow, or is this putting the Iowa State in that much more of a tough spot? Because even with time to prepare, you don't have somebody who's had the experience of Hunter Deckers playing at Iowa State in a game.
So the kind of conclusion that I've come around to, or that I've settled on, it makes the most sense, or is the most reasonable anyways, is that quarterback play was problem like number four last season. That was, I mean, offensive line was one and two. The running back staying healthy and doing a better job was another one. Wide receivers besides Xavier Hutchinson was stepping up. That was a huge issue. Quarterback play was like I said, it was problem number five, basically. And priority number one has not changed, and that is getting the offensive line in order. Now, Ryan Clanton's job as the offensive line, the new offensive line coach, got just a little bit more important because now he's got to protect a rookie quarterback versus a slightly more experienced quarterback. But that doesn't change the overall thing that needs to happen, which is the offensive line needs to get better. If the three things or four things that needed to be fixed before quarterback play are fixed, quarterback play will inherently be better. If the offensive line is better, if they're better at run blocking and it makes the running game more effective, that makes the quarterback's job easier, makes the offensive coordinator's job a lot easier, makes everybody's job a lot easier when the offensive line is doing well. When the offensive coordinator has got a good game plan put together, makes everybody's job easier. Rocco Beck and J.J. Cole, while inexperienced, are both plenty talented enough to take advantage of a decent offensive line and a good game plan. They're both talented enough to do that. If the handful of issues more important issues than quarterback play are solved, I am not worried about the quarterback play.
Okay.
If that makes sense.
Yeah, no. Quarterback is still not the biggest issue, even with what's going on.
It never was, and it still isn't.
Right. People who have pointed out Hunter Decker's performance, the argument has been like, yeah, but when you can't run the ball and the offensive line can't protect, like, and you have one weapon everyone knows you're going to throw to, like, it's going to limit any quarterback. I don't care how good you are.
And an offensive coordinator that just – honestly, I wish he was the one that found shaving points, because that would have made a lot more sense. I mean, yeah, like, that's just kind of what it is. It's funny though, is they should have, if Hunter Deckers was going to do this, they should have done enough so they have to vacate wins so that Iowa State can finally count itself as an elite football program, because they had vacated before. So, it's really just shame on Hunter Deckers for not taking it far enough.
Okay. Well, that is certainly a take. And I'm not shocked that it came from you on this podcast. I mean, look, I've been on the under on Iowa State. I know the irony of saying that I bet money on the under on Iowa State's win total because of this reported news in relation to the fact that there's a player who's not going to play because he was betting on Iowa State events. So trust me, I get it. do me a favor, plug it all, man.
I mean, if anybody that listens to this podcast doesn't know who I am at this point, I don't know what they're doing, but
it's always someone's first time, first time for somebody, everybody.
That's fair. So yeah, wideRightNatalyLight.com or wideRTNatalyLT on Twitter. We've got Discord server that's very, very active. We're up to like 900 members. We have a weekly YouTube show. We've got all sorts of fun stuff cooking. And then I do lots of other non sports stuff too, but not as relevant to this audience, unless you're really into Magic the Gathering.
Let's see, between Magic and drums, Levi's got plenty of things going on. Levi, always a pleasure, man. Look forward to having you back on for more pleasant conversation next time.
Yeah, hopefully. We'll see what Iowa State's doing at the time. If the offensive line is still crap, it's going to be another unpleasant conversation.
I'm Alex Rodriguez.
And I'm Jason Kelly.
From Bloomberg, this is The Deal. Each week, you'll hear us in conversation with business icons.
This show will explore deal-making across sports, media, and entertainment.
That is a harsh lesson in business.
Sports is not as simple as bringing a bunch of big names together.
I didn't want to do another stomp you out speech.
It opened up so many more doors.
The show is called The Deal.
Listen to The Deal.
Listen to The Deal on Spotify.
It is time for our first position group ranking podcast of the 2023 season. We do a handful of these every year ahead of the start of the season. I love doing these. And we are going to start with the unit that I make sure we do every single year. That, of course, is the offensive line. It is always the most underappreciated position group on the field, despite being, frankly, one of the most important position groups. It's one of the hardest to do because who knows who the starting five are going to be. We see starting five alone, like, you better have a good eight deep. So it's more than just those five. There's not a ton of data. So I love doing offensive line because I think it is a fantastic group to do. And I'm very excited about the two people I have on the podcast today to help us rank all 14 Big 12 offensive line groups. So we're going to rank them 1-14. At the end of that, we're going to kind of tier them out, because I think tiering groupings is almost more important than just a straight 1-14 ranking to really understand, the difference there. So joining us again for a second year for one of our position group ranking pods, very excited to have Ian Boyd, a contributor for Texas or Inside Texas, as well as the operator of the War Games Substack, which is a fantastic Substack that I am subscribed to. Ian, welcome back, man.
Thanks for having me. I'm hoping to do a little better than last year when I spent like half my speaking time promising the arrival of Jaden Bray on the scene. And I don't know how many catches he had last year, but I think it was somewhere south of like 15. So
yeah, you and me both, sir. You and me both. So don't feel too bad. Also joining us, first time guest here on the podcast and for position group rankings, very excited to have Max Chadwick, who is a college football analyst for PFF and host of the Preferred Walk-On Show. Max, welcome, sir.
Thank you so much for having me on. I'm pumped to give out some more terrible takes probably on the show once the season's over. But yeah, I'm pumped to talk to you guys.
Look, I will admit this past year, we had our good friend Parker Fleming, Stats of War, on after the season to kind of review our rankings. Because look, it's college football. It's hard to do some of this because we're having to go in with less information you get with the NFL. Like, right, you have starting units that are ever changing. You've got new faces. We've got the transfer portal. So who knows who's going to transition over well and who's not. Guys moving up a level, moving down a level. So like, I do think this is really interesting. Plus, you've got four programs who have moved up to a Power 5 level. Like, I really think a lot of rankings and a lot of things that I've looked at between different magazines and preseason polls and rankings of that sort, like, I think some people are having a hard time with four newcomers because the expectation is they're going to struggle more. But also, like, if you cover the Big 12, you're not as familiar with them, and so you feel more confident about the 10 teams. I'm curious, before we get started, from both of you, where do you feel like you had, outside of just, you know, offensive line data is hard to come up with, like, the biggest kind of struggle putting your list together? Ian, why don't you go first?
I mean, just knowing who the starting five would be for each team was at least half the battle. And then I struggled to differentiate teams. Like, I tried to look at it like, how am I going to differentiate this line from this? Because I haven't necessarily watched all these guys closely. I have a sense of what each unit did last year, obviously. But just with the turnover and everything, it was just, I had to spend probably most of my thought in just being like, how am I going to try to rank these guys? Like, what's going to be, what differentiates the better ones from the weaker ones? The easy one of experience does not apply, because what I found when I compiled starting fives for all these teams was that almost every single team in the league has multiple fifth year, sixth year guys. And then some of the teams that don't have that are the teams that have maybe the more talented athletes. So that made it hard.
Max, same question.
Yeah, no, that's a good point. Yeah, I ranked the top 10 offensive lines in college football for PFF that came out, I think, a couple days ago. And one of the differences, because I rank every position group for PFF, and one of the differences, I think, in offensive line play than, say, receiving core, running back unit, or quarterback rooms, was that, you know, the offensive line really is dependent on your weakest link. You know, it's not like a receiving core where you could say, hey, you got Marvin Harrison Jr., you got Emeka Egbuka, that's all you need. They got the number one receiving core in the country. Or you got Blake Corum and Donovan Edwards. Or you have Caleb Williams in your quarterback room. That's the number one in the country. Offensive line really is dependent on all five starters. So, it is difficult trying to rank it when you say, okay, you know, Joe Alt, in my opinion, the Notre Dame left tackle, he's the best offensive tackle in college football, but I had Notre Dame as the number six offensive line in the country just because, you know, they got a really good right tackle in Blake Fisher, but the interior offensive line is a little weaker. So it's difficult to try to, like, separate, you know, okay, how much does a superstar elevate an offensive line versus how much, you know, does everything else drag it down? Like, Penn State wasn't in my top 10, even though they have Olufoshanu, who I think is, you know, the second best offensive lineman in college football. So, it's difficult, you know, because it's more about just superstars. It's about how good the entirety of the offensive line is.
Yeah. Offensive line is tough to do, but I think it's really interesting. It's the one I think is the most fun. So I think we're going to have a good time today. All right. So we're going to go 1 through 14. Like I said, at the end, we're going to kind of tier this off because I think tiering helps us understand the actual gaps between individual units because, you know, we say 1 through 14, it's never that even, you know, the difference between 1 and 3 might be the same as the distance between 3 and 4. So, Max, as a first time guest here on the show, you have the honor of going first, sir. Who do you think, or who do you have as the number one offensive line of the Big 12 for the 2023 season?
Yeah, so the only Big 12 school that placed in the top 10 of my ranking was Texas, who I had at number 7 overall. And, you know, I saw some other offensive line rankings nationally from other people, and they had him like as high as like 3 or 4. And I understand because, you know, they do return all 5 starters from last year. But, you know, thanks to the data we have at PFF, you know, you could tell that there are some issues on that offensive line. Now, I think Kelvin Banks Jr. is a fantastic left tackle. He's amazing in his true freshman season, former 5-star recruit. I think Christian Jones, their right tackle, is also really, really good as well. The issue, and also Jake Majors, the center, I think is a pretty good center. The issue is a guard, and Hayden Connor and Cole Hudson both graded below 55 last year. Now, they do have DJ Campbell there, who was a five-star recruit in the 2022 class, so maybe he can come along and be a starter and take one of those spots away from them. And Cole Hudson was only a true freshman last year, but that guard spot is still an issue. But I think, you know, what they have in Kelvin Banks and Christian Jones and even Jake Majors at center, I think that is right now, I would say, the best offensive line in the Big 12.
I like that. I like that. Ian, who do you have?
I also have Texas. I was hoping to just obscure that because it'd be easier if the not Texas guy says Texas number one. But I'll give some negatives on Texas and some other background I know just from our insider knowledge at Inside Texas. They were so insanely young last year, which is a difficult mitigating factor. Cole Hudson played with a bad shoulder the entire year as a true freshman. I think they also would assign him to help Jones out sometimes because Jones struggles with inside moves. So he just had a whole lot on his plate and was, you know, an early enrollee, but that's it. And then Hayden Connor was almost counted like a veteran, but he was actually only a true sophomore and not a returning starter. And then an interesting development for the fall is that they might try to edge out Jake Majors, who is a good player, but not necessarily like he's like a smaller, quicker guy. And they want to run more downhill power type schemes. So they might try to see if Cole Hudson can slide down to center and bump him out. And then that would make room at guard for the aforementioned DJ Campbell. But then the other mitigating factor is that they can't play DJ Campbell or anybody else if they don't protect Quinn Ewers, because Texas will probably be number one on your wide receiver rankings for the Big 12 this year. And they're going to run the ball, but throwing the ball is where their bread needs to be buttered. So they have a lot of – I have them number one, but it's because, you know, they return five starters. Every single guy on the unit is extremely talented, but there's a lot of questions about how well they'll age in year two with some of these guys, if the lineup shuffles or not, if the scheme changes. They also played with six linemen a lot last year, and we play Andre Karich as a tight end. They may do that again this year with the 360-pound Cam Williams. This is just a lot. There's a lot to tease out with Texas.
Well, it's 3-for-3 with Texas number one. I don't think that's too surprising. I can already hear Kansas State fans shrieking at the podcast. Like I, it's not just the talent to me. It's also the potential because of how young this offensive line was the last year, and still, I mean, Kelvin Banks is a true sophomore. This is a very young offensive line that is still developing, and to see how well it played last year, as young as it was, and now to know that they're a year older, like in theory, if you are talented and you have a good offensive line coach, which Texas does, like that is an offensive line that should improve, especially when you bring so much back. So I think it was a really good offensive line last year. I think it's easy to put them number one because there is such a higher ceiling because of the youth versus some of the other offensive lines who bring a bunch of guys back. To me, there is more growth potential, which means it's easier for me to see them surpassing anyone else and already being as high as they are. So I think that's great. One stat that I really like is opportunity rate. Shout out to Football Outsiders for this one. Opportunity rate is basically like, did the offensive line help the running backs gain the yardage that was available to them? Texas last year in opportunity rate was number 8 in the country at 54.4%. So basically, the definition is the percentage of carries when 4 yards are available that gain at least 4 yards, i.e. the percentage of carries where the line does its job. It's a really good example of, if this is available, did the offensive line ensure that the offense gained, the running backs gained, quarterbacks, the yardage that was available? Texas was pretty good at it. Now, obviously, Bijan deserves some credit for that being Bijan, but I think the potential here just makes them an easy pick at number one. All right, it's not surprising. Typically, number one is a consensus. I can't think of very many examples where it's not. So here's where I wonder if this is going to get interesting. Max, who do you have at number two?
This one's difficult because, like I said, I didn't have any other Big 12 schools in my top 10 nationally. But the school I'm going to go with at number two, and I know you said Kansas State fans are probably going to be upset that they weren't number one. Well, they're probably going to be upset with me that they're not number two either, because I have the West Virginia Mountaineers, I think, have a really, really good offensive line coming back next year. Wyatt Millen from West Virginia is a first-team preseason All-Big 12 for PFF. Doug Nestor at guard, first-team preseason All-Big 12. Zach Frazier, one of the best centers in college football, first-team preseason All-Big 12. So you look at that offensive line, and PFF came out with their preseason All-Big 12 team. Three of the five starters are first-team All-Big 12. So, yeah, I think West Virginia's offensive line is pretty loaded, and I really, really like what they got there down in down in West Virginia.
That is – I think having number two is a little bit shocking. I saw the tweet that went out about the preseason All Big 12 team and had three West Virginia offensive linemen on it. That was that one is very, I don't want to say hot take. I don't think that's a fair description for it, but it's definitely different than I think most people have. Ian, who do you have it to?
I had West Virginia high, but not that high. So I'm kind of annoyed that he edged me out on that take. I went Kansas State number two. Mm-hmm. I don't like to, they're like the opposite of what you said about Texas. Like Texas was good last year, not the best line in the Big 12, but good. And then they have all this room to grow. I think Kansas State is mostly maxed out, but they were good, you know? So I think, you know, getting Cooper Beebe back was really helpful and honestly unexpected. I assume that he's being well compensated in their NIL program for his return. They could just run out the same five, or they could shuffle it around because they have the top five back and then like the three top backups back. They have like a guard that has almost been one of their best players for 2 years in a row, but he keeps getting injured, and Taylor Poitier, I think. So the only deal with them is that their pass protection is not amazing. Like neither of their tackles are going to play tackle in the NFL, if they even play in the NFL. But yeah, they're a good unit at number two.
You and I agree, Ian, with Kansas State at number two. Like, it's a solid offensive line. They bring back all five starters and their top eight from last year. Like, that's your second year with your offensive coordinator, Will Howard, now named the starter. Like, I think for this Kansas State offense, like, having everybody come back is huge. Having Cooper Beebe, who is a consensus first team All Big 12 with like everything I could find, like Athlon, Phil Steele, Big 12, Pick Six Preview, like PFF, like he is the best offensive lineman in the Big 12, period. And having that on your team, like that is a huge boom for an offensive line that doesn't have the talent level as like Texas, but with all the experience they have, having him on that line as an anchor, like that is huge. And again, bringing eight guys back, again, returning production is only as good as the returning production is good. But this is a good offensive line. Can they get demonstrably better than last year? I think you're right on their being, they're about at their ceiling. But if they even improve a little bit more, like not improving at all, like, I just don't see anybody else who's got, other than Texas, who's got the obvious opportunity to, like, surpass Kansas State based off of how well they played last year. So I agree with Kansas State at number two. Okay, Max, are Wildcat fans going to be more angry, or are you popping them in here at number three?
No, I'm popping them in there at number three. I actually was lucky enough to talk to Cooper Beebe, and he was one of my favorite interviews that I've done so far. And I agree with you guys. I think he is the best interior offensive lineman in college football, one of the best offensive linemen in college football, period. And what impressed me so much about him is that, you know, he started off his career, played a little right tackle for the Wildcats, was great there. Played left tackle for the Wildcats, great there. Played left guard for the Wildcats, amazing there. So, I mean, this guy plays tackle, guard, and he even told me he was working out at center a little bit this offseason too. So, I mean, he's got the full spectrum going on that offensive line, and no matter where he lines up, he's an elite, elite offensive lineman. So, I really wanted to put Kansas State in my top 10 overall just because of him. But like you guys said, there are some issues elsewhere on the offensive line, even though they bring back all five starters. But yeah, Cooper Beebe is the best offensive lineman in the Big 12. And I don't even think it's really close, really. So yeah, I got Kansas State checking in number three.
All right, Ian, who do you have?
Three, I had Oklahoma.
Mm-hmm.
I think Oklahoma is potentially worse across the offensive line than they were last year. But I don't know if that's that bad of a thing. They have to replace both tackles, but Guyton at times was better than Morris, I think a lot of people thought. He's back. He's reportedly doing very well. They got the Stanford transfer left tackle. He's not Anton Harrison, but he's pretty good.
Mm-hmm.
A big thing with them is Savion Byrd, the blue chip. What year is he? He's like a probably a junior by now. Oklahoma Byrd. Yeah, third year junior. One of the most athletic linemen in the Big 12. They played him at guard. He pulls like a ballerina. He was a little light in spring. He was like 280 pounds, and they were apparently not very happy about that. His weight and his status in the fall is probably a decent bellwether for whether Venables is really getting that culture and that program and roster to buy in or not. But if he comes back in the fall and he looks good, then that's like one more plus athlete on their line. That's one more guy that'll be a weapon. After listening to Max, I kind of wish I'd put West Virginia over them, but I have.
All right. Oklahoma at number three. Well, you know, I had the courage. You did not, sir. I have West Virginia at number three in my
ranking. I'm getting edged out by both of you.
What? Yeah. I'm sorry. You thought you were going to be a hot take with them just like top four or five. I mean, look, Wyatt Millen is good. Zach Frazier, we know he's really good. He is a consensus first teamer from PFF and Pick Six and Big 12 mm-hmm. and Steele and Athlon. Like, he's the best center in the Big 12. And I know Kansas fans are going to be happy about that, but he is. I think Doug Nestor is not. Like, this is a really, it's almost, this is the most frustrating thing for me for West Virginia is they should have a really good offensive line this year and the team still might win four games, like when you have this unit. And, but like, this was a good offensive line last year. Your biggest issue was Jaquay Hubbard, but he's gone from right tackle to right guard and switched with Nestor. And I think that switch might actually benefit this West Virginia offensive line to make it even better. Like, this is a really good offensive line. If they struggle at quarterback with whoever they decide to name the starter, like, it's not going to be because the offensive line isn't giving him protection. It's going to just be because the quarterback play is subpar. Like, it's one of the reasons I really like CJ Johnson to kind of be a, I don't want to say dark horse first team Big 12 running back, but he could become that because he's going to have this offensive line to run behind. I don't think they have, like, their ceiling to me is as good as Kansas State, just because I think there is a little bit more talent here than Kansas State's has, if that makes sense. But I have to see that from them. Like, I think this is a really good unit. I have them at number three.
Hey, it's Kaylee Cuoco for Priceline. Ready to go to your happy place for a happy price? Well, why didn't you say so? Just download the Priceline app right now and save up to 60% on hotels. So whether it's Cousin Kevin's Kazoo Concert in Kansas City, go Kevin! Or Becky's Bachelorette Bash in Bermuda, you never have to miss a trip ever again. So download the Priceline app today. Your savings are waiting.
Go to your happy place for a happy price. Go to your happy price, Priceline.
So, number four then, Max, who you got?
Yeah, I got Oklahoma. I think, you know, Ian made some really good points with them. I think the, you know, Walter Rouse is a guy I know that they are very excited about. McCade Matower is a guy that PFF loves at left guard for them. I think he's a terrific guard. And yeah, they just bring back a lot of starters, man. Yeah, they lose Anton Harrison, who, of course, first round pick in the draft. But I like what they got there right now. And then Caleb Schaefer, the transfer coming in at the other guard spot, I think is a good, pretty good player. Andrew Rehm at center is pretty good. Yeah, I think this Oklahoma offensive line all around is just really, really solid. And like I said before, like, you need that at all five positions rather than just, you know, I'd rather have solid across the board than a superstar at one position and, you know, below average players everywhere else. So yeah, I think Oklahoma's offensive line across the board is pretty solid. And that's why I have him at number four.
You know, what's interesting about Matower is that he's like the ultimate PFF guy.
Mm-hmm.
If you watch him, he'll always make good contact. He'll always hit his guy, but he doesn't really displace people. but he doesn't blow assignments.
Mm-hmm.
But that, I don't know if that's, I think I've heard some of their commentators be kind of annoyed with him because they think he's not very nasty or powerful. But on the other hand, in their spread system, if you just make contact on people,
yeah,
the ball carrier has so much space to work with that that's usually going to get the job done. So I kind of like him.
Well, Ian, who do you have it for?
West Virginia. I don't have anything else to say that y'all haven't already covered there.
I do think it's like, and this is why I think it'll be interesting when we get down to the tier spot, because at four, I have Oklahoma, and I don't think I have much more to add than you guys. And I do think the consensus point of like the reason I have them four versus everyone else is everyone else has got everyone else has somebody on their roster I think is the best at their position in the Big 12. And the point of like Oklahoma doesn't, I don't think Oklahoma has any guy on there who's like, that's the best right guard, the best left tackle, any of that. But show me their biggest weakness, and everyone else probably has at least one spot on their offensive line that is worse than everyone Oklahoma has. And so even if, like, I'm sure Oklahoma fans want to nitpick because, you know, you start getting to a point where if you're an Oklahoma fan or you're covering Oklahoma, if everything should just be the best. But, like, it's a really solid offensive line. Like, it's going to play well in this Big 12. I think offensive line in the Big 12 is really good. I think the top – go ahead, Ian. Oh, I thought you had said this.
They're not very deep, Oklahoma. That's the one thing about their line, is that if you lose a Guyton or a Rouse, maybe even one of the guards, it could all of a sudden you could find a hole.
I think that's a great point. At this point I trust Biedenbaugh. Even if you don't come in with like the best, and we have a few questions, like I think him as an offensive line coach and developer like gives me enough faith to say like he's done it enough. I'm going to need evidence not to trust that they'll be okay until he gives me evidence that they're not going to be okay. Like, it's kind of one of those, it's the same thing of like, I'll trust you. I'll see it when I believe it when I see it. Well, I'll believe that they're going to be terrible on offensive line or at any position when I see that they're terrible or bad on offensive line. I do think it's interesting. We all have the same top four in a variety of orders, which again, why I think the tier ranking at the end of this conversation will be interesting. All right. So, time to name somebody new here. Max, who do you have at number five?
Yeah, this one was tough because I think the top four is pretty clear. And then after that, you know, you start to get to the nitty gritty of the offensive line. And at number five, I should say, I had Baylor. I think Baylor is a school that, you know, consistently produces really good offensive line play. I love the Barrington brothers they bring in from now a fellow Big 12 school in BYU, especially Clark Barrington. I think he is a terrific center for them. I think he'll immediately be a really good player. I like Gavin Byers a lot at left guard. He's coming back for them as well. So, you know, they break in three new starters, one of them being Campbell Barrington, the left tackle, Clark's brother. And then Tate Williams and Elijah Ellis should be the other two starters there. But, you know, in terms of, you know, I really like Clark Barrington. I think he's one of the better centers, one of the best centers, I think, in the Big 12. And then after that, I think Gavin Byers is one of the better guards in the Big 12 too. So this is a team. And also, like, something I know we talk about individual players right now, but I think something that we should bring up about Baylor is that they are consistently one of the better offensive lines in the Big 12. So, you know, I think their coaching in terms of the trenches is fantastic. And I, you know, would be surprised if Baylor doesn't have yet again another great offensive line. They actually had the highest graded offensive line in PFF's system last year. I know they lost some key players, but I mean, they're consistently up there. So I think Baylor, I would put here at number five.
Okay. I like that. I did not have them that high. Ian, who do you have?
Baylor.
Okay.
Mostly the same reasons. I went back and forth on them a little bit. I know some of their guys. I talked to Travis Roeder of Sikkim 365 sometimes, and they think that this roster actually suits the scheme more than previous rosters. They have like quicker, more wide zone type linemen to work with. The clincher for me was that the guys that that Jeff Grimes had to work with in 2021, when he built a shockingly good line, were probably much less proven, less experienced in the system, and less of a fit than the guys he has this year. So even though they are plugging in a lot of new starters, I just think that they're kind of like Max is saying, I think they kind of got their system installed, and it's just going to be plug and play from here on out, as long as Gravis is there.
Okay. I don't have Baylor at five. I am going to break this consensus. I actually have Kansas here. I think this is a very underrated offensive line. I love Mike Nowitzki at center. I love Dominic Puni at left guard. I think that's fantastic. I think getting Logan Brown, the Wisconsin transfer at left tackle, is really going to make the left side to center of that offensive line one of the better sides of an offensive line in the Big 12. I mean, you look at last year, and I understand part of this is because they have mobile quarterbacks, but they allowed 12 sacks in 13 games, which is the fewest in the Big 12. 14th best sack rate at just 3.3%. Like, with a mobile quarterback and the mobile quarterback that they have, as long as he stays healthy, in Jalen Daniels, like, you talked about it, Max, of all these other things, all five guys have to operate, but I also think so one of the reasons people have been high on Texas Tech offensive line sometimes is scheme kind of hides some of the stuff. I do think this is an underrated offensive line, and I think this offensive line unit, starting especially, with the scheme they play and the mobile quarterback, makes their job easier. So I think this is why I have Kansas here. I think this is a really underrated offensive line. They've got some questions. We're going to see how Spencer Lovell, Cal transfer, does at right guard. He looked good in his three games at Cal before he got injured for the season. I think he should be fine here at Kansas. I have Kansas at five.
Interesting. So you want me to go with number six then?
Yeah, I do.
So yeah, I really I did a Kansas best final because I agree with a really underrated offensive line. The school I actually went with though here at number six is a newcomer to the Big 12, and I think they have the guy who's going to be taken probably the highest in the 2024 draft if I had to make a bet right now, and that is BYU. You know, Kingsley Suamataia, the left tackle there, who again another guy I was able to talk to. He was a phenomenal interview, and he moves over from right tackle to left tackle, filling in for Blake Freeland, who is a major loss for the Cougars. But other than Suamataia, I mean, they got Connor Pay at left guard, who I think is a terrific left guard. Paul Mail transfers in from Utah at center. I think he's a pretty solid center. And then, you know, they break in another new right guard, new right tackle, but Caleb Etienne was a starter that transfers in too. So, you know, I like what BYU's got, especially what they have on that left side of the offensive line between Kingsley Suamataia and Connor Pay. And yeah, I that's why I would put them here at number six, and having the best offensive line of the four newcomers to the Big 12.
I like that. That is interesting. All right, Ian, who do you have?
I went with also a new team to the Big 12, but I went UCF.
I like it.
They brought in some transfers. I don't know if those guys will even necessarily crack the lineup or not. They brought in like a former five-star from Alabama, Amari Kite. But then they've got all these guys that have been in the program for a while that may just hold on to starting spots that have been there. I know that their talent inputs are pretty good. I know some of their transfers are good. I know their returning guard, Paole, is good. And then I like the Gus Malzahn, Herb Hand combination, at least for run blocking. So I could probably be talked out of that. I think the case for BYU is pretty solid, honestly. But, I have the Knights.
I was curious if once we got past the top four, how variety or how mixed this would be. I think so far it's kind of showing that it is. Now, I have Baylor at six, just one spot behind you guys. I'm not sure how many other points I can make. Like, my question for Baylor and why I don't have them fifth, and I have them at six, the talent is obviously there. You lose six guys from last year who played on the offensive line. You lose four starters. Like, there is the reputation of I need to see it click. Like, and I think we will quickly. Like, I'm not that worried. Again, Gavin Byers, Barrington, we've talked about all of this stuff. The Barrington brothers are going to be awesome. I need to see it gel for a game before I'm just like, yep. Like, I think the ceiling here is pretty high. But I have them at six because when you have replaced that many guys who started for you, I understand the talent. I understand BYU is like, they're like not, they're Power 5 now. They weren't true G5 last year because they play so many P5 teams on the schedule. I think that transition is easier for them going from BYU to Baylor, having, you know, a former BYU offensive line coach coaching you probably doesn't hurt either. So I've got this. I like it. I feel like I'm like hedging here on Baylor. And it's, I really like the potential. I just need to see it and make sure that it all comes together when you're placing that many starters from last year.
Fair. Yeah, at number seven for me is another newcomer to the Big 12, but it's actually not UCF, even though I do really like UCF's offensive line. I got Houston coming in at number seven. I think Patrick Paul is one of the better pass protectors in college football, honestly, and he's a guy that I know my colleagues at PFF, Trevor Sikkema and Connor Rogers, both of them really, really like him as a prospect in the 2024 NFL draft. So I think he's a terrific left tackle for the Cougars. And then they also have Tyler Johnson coming back at guard, who I think is a, again, really good pass protector at guard. And then Jack Freeman coming back at center too. So yeah, this Houston offensive line, man, I mean, they really have, you know, a good three there in Patrick Paul, Tyler Johnson, and Jack Freeman. And yeah, I think this is going to be a really good pass protecting O-line for, you know, their new quarterback, Donovan Smith, there probably. So yeah, I think Houston, I would probably put here at number seven, just because I really love, especially what they got at left tackle and left guard and Patrick Paul and Tyler Johnson.
Very interesting. All right, Ian.
I also have Houston at number seven. I was surprised myself with that one, but they have like a Unaje and Freeman and Paul all back.
Mm-hmm.
It's promising. Kind of an inconsistent team last year, but that's just a really good start. Tyler Johnson. Definitely a lot of ability. I remember him from Texas. There's a reason that he's at Houston and not at Texas anymore. And it has to do with maximizing or not maximizing on his ability. And then I believe they have another like former blue chip transfer at their other guard, Tank Jenkins, I think, from can't remember where he's from. I don't know. They have a lot of athleticism. Their quarterback is going to help them, Donovan Smith. They have, if you looked at the recruiting rankings or like the some of the draft prospectus on these guys, they look like they should be even higher than seven. I have them a little lower just because I think that Houston has been kind of underachieving in the Holgorsen era. He seems to, I kind of have the suspicion that for Holgorsen, this is like a pseudo retirement gig. So I can't put them any higher.
I didn't think we'd have a consensus at number seven, but we do. So that's awesome. I also have Houston number seven. I look at all the different rating systems and you look at like PFF Max and Tank Jenkins is the only one who doesn't have like a 69 grade or higher. And he was an A&M transfer. He's actually been at Ian. He transferred to A&M. He'd actually been at Houston for a couple seasons though. Like Patrick Paul, Jack Freeman, and Tyler Johnson, they started 36 to 39 possible games last year. Like, you're bringing back a ton. That opportunity rate that I talked about that I like so much, they were number seven nationally last year at 54.4%, top 30 in sack rate and passing down sack rate. Like, I don't hold Houston's issues last year as a program against the offensive line. Like, I don't feel like that was the problem for Houston last year. It was just a very inconsistent team. Yet at one point, it felt like Holgorsen was throwing the team under the bus. It felt like a weird year where there was a lot of expectation for them, and the schedule got significantly harder than it was the year prior, and they couldn't quite handle it. And so I don't know that I hold that against them. Like, I think this is very much one of those, they're ranked this low because, like, it's a good unit. I just don't know that I trust the team as a whole. Like, I'm seeing preseason rankings of Houston basically like 11th, 12th, 13th, 14th. Like, which is a crazy thing to say. Same thing with West Virginia to say, like, our offensive line's going to be really good. The team's just going to be like, we don't know. Like, I think it will be one of the better offensive lines in the Big 12 that goes underappreciated because the team probably isn't going to live up to how well they play and might put the offensive line in some tough spots this year. But again, I'm curious from you guys, right tackle. Are we expecting Unaje, I think that's how we pronounce his last name. I couldn't find a pronouncer, or Garth to start there?
I think so.
I would guess the Nigerian over Garth.
That was my expectation as well.
Garth at Texas was not a guy that should play right tackle for a competitive team.
Okay.
Yeah.
At least not yet. I mean, he had like these massive knee injuries in high school and then early in college. And so he could have recovered some of his, like in high school, he looked like he might be a future left tackle, but unless that's back, I don't think so. You notice though that with Houston, like their receivers look good. Their offensive line looks good. I like Donovan Smith, especially in that offense. Mm-hmm. Like these inputs look terrific, but just the sense around the that program is just like not either they're going to surprise us or it's going to be like, hey, maybe we should like maybe Fertitta should pull the rug out, you know.
I think he's got other things he's worried about, like a rebuilding Houston Rockets team, but you know.
Well, he seems like maybe he should worry less about that because I don't think he's doing any good there.
Okay, Max, who do you have at 8?
Yeah, I have UCF here at number 8. I think, you know, you make some really good points with them. I think they have some pretty good players come back. Lokai Paule, I hope I got that right. But yeah, he's, I think, a really, really good guard in the Big 12. Tylan Grable is coming back at left tackle too. I think he's a pretty solid left tackle for them. And then they got, you know, 3 transfers now coming in and probably starting immediately on that offensive line. Amari Kite is a guy I got a lot of hype coming out of Alabama, and I think he could, you know, could finally find his footing at UCF. And then Marcellus Marshall transferring in, Bula Schmidt transferring in as well. So yeah, it's a new look offensive line. I think, you know, if they had Matt Lee, who transferred to Miami, I would think this offensive line could be a lot higher on this list because I think Matt Lee is one of the best centers in college football, but he left UCF to go to Miami. Without him, you know, I would say this is more of a middle of the pack offensive line in the Big 12. Whereas with Matt Lee, you know, they might have a case for the top 5 of this list because I think he's that special of a player. But yeah, I think right here is pretty fair for them.
All right. Ian, number 8.
BYU. My only hesitation was probably going to be a more passing team. Caleb Etienne, the Oklahoma State guy. Did I get his name right?
Yeah.
It seems like he transferred in part because Oklahoma State wants to run the ball more, and he was not a good run blocker at all. Good pass protector, but not a good run blocker. So it seems like their name of the game for them is probably going to be throwing the ball and pass protection. So with Etienne and that guy.
All right, Max, we need the pronunciation because I couldn't find one.
All right, so
it's Suamataia.
All right.
Yeah.
Awesome.
I think that their protection looks solid, but then their interior guys are, they got like 2 transfers there. And I don't know. I think they could end up being a lot higher, but they're a little bit of a mismatch unit. And, I think if they can just get them to keep Slovis upright to throw 40 times a game, that's kind of going to be the name of the game for them.
I have BYU here as well. I had Suamataia and my first team All Big 12 ballot. Mm-hmm. Like I think very highly of him. I think he's awesome. I think the transition to the Big 12 is not going to be an issue for him. Like, look, I know part of it's the scheme change, Ian. ETN was very much a like prop to BYU for getting him out of the portal and getting a transfer power 5 offensive lineman, but it wasn't a situation of like they stole an offensive lineman that wasn't, you know, looking for another opportunity because he was being replaced. And it's a guy that is like, okay, like I think he'll be fine at right tackle. We'll see. I'm interested in the switch of Connor Pay from center to left guard. And he would have played well last year. I'm concerned about Maley, if I'm pronouncing that right, the Utah transfer who started center. And then you've got a JUCO guy who played one game last year in LaSalle Tai, who I think is supposed to start at right guard. Mind you all, finding starting offensive line units that are set in stone for anybody is, as Ian said, very difficult. So like going through what I think is supposed to be the BYU offensive starting line, like there's a couple of just like gems, and then I've got big questions at other spots, and so I see holes that make me go, I think BYU's offensive line has a lot of potential, but we've got a couple spots that make me concerned.
I guess fair. Okay, so we're at number 9 now, correct?
Yes, number 9.
Okay, So number nine, I'm going to actually go with a school I don't think we've talked about yet, and that's TCU. This is a school that loses some big-time players from that offensive line last year. Obviously, a unit that helped them get all the way to the national championship game after being unranked to start the year. Steve Avila, obviously, the main guy there. But they also bring back some really awesome pieces. I think Brandon Coleman is one of the better tackles in the Big 12. And then, you know, a guy they brought in the transfer portal who really did not see the field in 2 years at Alabama is Tommy Brockermeyer. But if you put any stock into recruiting rankings, you should be having your eye on this guy, because this guy was, I think, a top five recruit coming out of high school overall in the country a couple years ago. So he's finally transferring there. I don't know if he actually will start for the Horned Frogs because he's battling Andrew Coker there at the right tackle spot, who was their returning starter from last year. But I am, you know, have an eye out for Tommy Brockermeyer just because of the unbelievable potential that he showed coming out of high school and what made him, you know, a top 5 to 10 recruit overall in the country. Just never really got to see the field at Alabama. And, you know, it's not like he was playing at a bad school either. Alabama's, you know, consistently producing NFL offensive linemen. So I'm excited to see if he can, you know, finally get on the field there. John Lands, is returning at center. Like I mentioned before, Andrew Coker is back at right tackle too, if he starts there. So, and then with that, and Brandon Coleman, who I think is one of the best tackles in the Big 12. I mean, I really do like what TCU's offensive line is returning and also bringing in this upcoming year, too. And Willis Patrick, I should mention, too, is probably going to be the right guard this year. He transfers from Jackson State, and he was looked pretty good. Of course, it's FCS competition, but he was pretty good at Jackson. So we'll see what he does now at the Power 5 level.
All right, Ian, who do you got?
I went Texas Tech here. They have maybe no one that is impressive, but everyone is like a sixth-year guy. They have like two Western Kentucky guys that have been with Kitley for like 4 or 5 years, or maybe 6 years. I don't quite remember his timeline. They shifted their tackles around in the offseason to get the Monroe Mills, the better pass protector on the left side, and move Caleb Rogers over. And then I don't know. I just think they're going to be very reliable I think it'll be very easy for their offensive coordinator to scheme around them. I think just because he knows exactly what he's going to get. I think they're going to do exactly what he expects them to do every snap. And he will just be careful not to expect too much of them, right? And I think that that's actually not a terrible thing. I've seen teams do very well in the Big 12 without particularly good offensive lines, if those offensive lines can just reliably execute the game plan, kind of like those 2021 Oklahoma State. Honestly, TCU last year was kind of like that. Avila was good, but other than that, they were pretty good. Did what you expected them to do. So, I went Tech.
Max, I'm with you here. I have TCU in this spot here at number nine. Like, I love the tackles, like Brandon Coleman and Andrew Coker, are going to be great. Like, if Brockermeyer passes up Coker, then he's obviously going to be awesome, because I think Coker is really good. I have questions about the interior. I always question FCS to P5 level transfer. Like, that takes time to adjust to with Willis Patrick. I'm not sure about Garrett Hayes at left guard. And then you mentioned John Lands at center. Like, I would actually keep an eye on Colton Deary, who transferring in from Maryland, who is the center. Mm-hmm. He doesn't get until the fall, and I think he's actually got the experience to maybe overtake Lands at the center spot there. We'll have to keep an eye on that. And so this is an offensive line that still feels a little unsettled. I mean, what I got from the TCU people I talked to was like, yeah, that sounds about right now. And so I feel like this is a really unsettled offensive starting five. And so it makes me want to, I dock them for that, despite how good and solid I feel like the tackles are. I have questions about the interior of this offensive line heading into the season.
I think it's a great point. I think their interior is definitely probably the weakness of that line. Obviously, you know, losing Steve Avila, who's a fantastic guard for them. So I think that's fair. I think, you know, their tackles drag them up this list from being at the bottom. But yeah, I think that's a pretty fair ranking. So number 10 now. Mm-hmm. I actually I got the Kansas Jayhawks here. I think, you know, they're another school that brings in a former 5-star recruit that never really got to see the field at his last school in Logan Brown, who now should be their starting left tackle for them, who is transferring in from Wisconsin. Again, like I mentioned, he's a top 20 recruit coming out of high school. Never really was able to see the field across his 3 years at Wisconsin, but we'll see what he's got now, probably as a left tackle for the Jayhawks this year. And then you mentioned Mike Nowitzki. I think he's a solid center for them. Spencer Lovell, the transfer coming in from Cal, who also played at Arizona State. He didn't really play too much last year, but the year before, I actually thought he was a really good pass protector, I believe, at Arizona State that year, because he bounced around a few schools now. But yeah, I like what he's got. I think he's going to be the right guard for them. I think he's a pretty good player. So yeah, between, you know, the potential of Logan Brown now in year four, and we don't really know what he's got yet, even though he's a former five-star recruit, Mike Nowitzki manning the middle, and then Spencer Lovell, I think, is a really good right guard. I think, you know, Kansas has a pretty solid offensive line, I would say, next year, heading into next season.
All right, Ian, number 10.
10, I have Oklahoma State. I think Oklahoma State, a lot of these teams are, you know, pretty much the same. Oklahoma State has a gazillion fourth, fifth year, sixth year guys. I think this year they'll get back to having a average or above average run blocker at every spot. Maybe more average than above average. I just think they're going to be a lot closer to 2021. Just being able to be like reliable and solid. They get Birmingham back is really big. They get last year it was like they had to start a different line every week. By the time they got to the Oklahoma game, it was like just a patchwork quilt of like, and some of the patches were like toilet paper plies. So I think that they have tremendous improvement that they can make as a result of just having a little bit of depth. They probably have like six or seven guys that could be average Big 12 players in the offensive line room this year. Last year they went into some games where it was like 2-4, you know? So I think I'm kind of giving them a sell. I only have them 10th. I think that they could be respectable this year.
I like how optimistic you both are, and then I feel like I'm coming in being like, well, here's why I think the team ranked here sucks. That's fine. I'm happy to be the negative one. That's not a problem. All right, well, here I'm much lower on them than you guys were. I have UCF at 10. I just have questions. Like, I like Tylan Grable. Like, I think at left tackle he's going to play well. I'm not going to try and pronounce Lokahi's last name because I'm tired of trying to mispronounce names. I think he's going to be good at right guard. But, like, Mari Knight at left guard, is Alabama transfer, like, should be good because went to Alabama. Are we going to get Bula Schmidt in the center, or is Drake Metcalf, who transferred from Alabama, going to take over center? Your right tackle, Marcellus Marshall, which is a Kent State transfer, who was fine at Kent State. Like, I'm not sold on this offensive line. Like, there's positives from last year. Again, opportunity rate, number 15 in the country. I love that. I love the number 12 and stuff rate. I have too many questions about this with so many transfers coming in. Like, I keep hammering this stat, and I forget who said it, and I wish I could keep giving them credit. Like, if 50% of your transfer class hits, that's a successful transfer class. And if you've got a bunch of transfers, like, what does that say? And if you've got a bunch of transfers on your offensive line, if half of them hit, great. Half of them are going to be okay. Like, I am more concerned with this offensive line and the depth, especially as we head into the back half of the season, which is obviously the thing for all the newcomers. I'm a little bit more concerned with this line than you guys are.
Yeah, I think it's fair.
Hearing that some of their transfers may not start, to me, was a little bit encouraging for UCF. So, but we'll see.
Fingers crossed. Or that's really bad news because they brought these guys in to start and now they're not going to because they're not good enough. So
I will say that Herb Hand was pretty good at Texas with transfers. He was better at recruiting transfers than he is at recruiting high schoolers.
Well, he's loving the transfer portal. Max, number 11.
All right, number 11. I want to go with Oklahoma State here. I think that they have a pretty – they actually did pretty well in the transfer portal in terms of getting Dalton Cooper there, who comes in from Texas State, who obviously is, you know, major jump in competition level, but I actually thought his tape at Texas State was phenomenal. So I thought he was one of the better offensive linemen in the transfer portal. And this is an Oklahoma State offensive line that really struggled last year. And I think he immediately is going to help out there. And then at right tackle, Jake Springfield comes back. I actually thought he was one of the solid parts of that offensive line last year. So yeah, I think between those two tackles, again, at this point now we're in the bottom four. You're kind of looking for anything to hang your hat on. And I think those two tackles for Oklahoma State are definitely something to hang your hat on. The interior is more of a question, but we'll see for them. But yeah, I think those two tackles between Dalton Cooper and Jake Springfield, those are the two guys that I'm saying, okay, you know what? At least I know the edges will be pretty well protected by those two.
All right. Ian, number 11.
11, I have Kansas. Maybe a little low, honestly. I kind of like that coaching staff. I like that they basically have just brought the best of the Buffalo guys over. This is good strategy because Buffalo is decent on the offensive line relative to like a P5. And definitely their quarterback will help them make them look better, as you were noting, Philip. But Logan Brown, I just don't know.
Mm-hmm.
Because like, why is it that if you're like a 6'5", 300 plus pound athlete and you can't get on the field, even at like Wisconsin, like what's wrong with you? You know, I'd like to know what exactly it is that's wrong with him. I know there was some altercation he had with a teammate.
Yeah.
I am just very hesitant to want to assume that he'll really amount to anything, even at Kansas. It's not like a diva wide receiver where you bring him in and it's like, just give them what they want and they'll produce for you. If an offensive lineman is like a total diva and can't get along with his teammates, I just don't know if that's going to work. I don't know if that's Brown or not, but it seems like it might be. And without him, I don't know that they have another like premier athlete on the roster. But so 11, maybe a little low, but they're in that middle tier with everybody else that has fifth and sixth year guys and they're all pretty good, you know, or average. That's why I have Kansas.
I mean, the potential for it to not go well with Brown is absolutely there. So I'm really excited about that, but I can understand. At 11, I have Texas Tech. Look, I think the point on like, this is a unit that it's not great at any spot. It's not terrible at any spot, but it's solid. And I also, like I noted earlier, like I think Texas Tech is definitely an offensive line that benefits from its offensive scheme. Now, if they can keep one quarterback healthy for a season, we'll see. I don't know that I always blame the offensive line on that because they're always bad and that's why your quarterbacks keep getting hurt or there's something going on in the water in Texas Tech. They moved a lot of guys around. You flipped Rogers and Mills, as you noted. I'm interested in the two Western Kentucky guys, specifically Rusty Stats at center, who I think is going to be really good for them. You get Cole Spencer at left guard, who is a Western Kentucky transfer, was expected to start last year. There was a lot of buzz about him heading into the season. He gets the injury and misses all of last year. You get Cole Spencer this year. Like, I think that if he plays this year the way he was expected to play last year, it immediately improves this offensive line. And so I might have them a little low here. Like, I think this is definitely one of those units that I would say I have them here based off of my opinion of Texas Tech offensive lines. But I could very easily see them jumping past a couple of these in the rankings and ending up top half of the conference, you know, like 7 or something by the end of the year, just because of the unit as a whole, as opposed to like there's a guy that's going to be an absolute stud. But I am very interested in this Texas Tech offensive line this year. Number 12, Max.
Yeah, I got Texas Tech here. I think Rusty Stats is a big time addition. Texas Tech actually had the lowest graded offensive line in the Big 12 last year, according to PFF. And I do think, though, that why I don't have maybe lower than number 12 is because, you know, they bring back so many starters from that last year's group. And, you know, you tend to see in college football, especially players tend to take, you know, steps forward in their career. So while maybe they didn't play great last year, you bring back your left tackle, Monroe Whit Mills, you bring back your right tackle, Caleb Rogers. Like I said, Rusty Stats, I think, like you mentioned before, is a great point, is that he's going to be a big time addition in that middle of the offensive line. So again, they were bad. They were a really bad offensive line last year, but you bring back most of the pieces, you expect some sort of development from them. Whereas a lot of these other offensive lines that we're going to talk about pretty soon, you break in a lot of new guys in that offensive line. And a lot of guys that we just have no tape on, really. So, yes, I'm lower on Texas Tech than you guys. But I do think, you know, they should take a step forward from being the worst offensive line in the Big 12 that they were last year.
Texas Tech and Baylor continue to provide the blueprint. If you're going to go get an offensive coordinator from a school, just go ahead and steal all their offensive linemen as well while you're at it. Hey, it works. So, you know, keep it up. Ian, who do you have at 12?
12, I have Iowa State. It's just hard for me to think they're going to be as bad as they were last year. They return everyone. You go either way, obviously, on that point. They have a new offensive line coach. They have a new strength and conditioning coach. Maybe there's not a lot of reasons to think they'll be good, but I just, it's hard for me to imagine them being as bad. It's a really good sell here, right?
Yeah. I'm not buying enough to take Iowa State here. This is where I have Oklahoma State. I have become an Oklahoma State offensive line pessimist. If you continue to do something enough times, I'm going to believe that that's who you are. Oklahoma State's inability to keep their offensive line healthy has become a problem. And throw in the fact that this is probably the third year now, at least, or the past 3 years, where they can't seem to figure out who their five best offensive linemen are, or the best five-man rotation, until like week three or four. Like, that they can't seem to figure that out heading into the season. Throw in the injuries you deal with. Like, there's potential for them to be better here. You mentioned Birmingham. Birmingham's coming off of an injury. Is he fully healthy? Because if he is, I think he has a potential to be their best offensive lineman. We'll see how long he takes to get back. But like, this is one of those offensive lines where I asked three different people who like get to go to practice and cover the team and are very close tied to it, and they all gave me different starting five offensive lines. Like, no one could give me the same one. The most consensus I could get was Dalton Cooper, Texas State transfer, as you mentioned, Max, who I think most of us are high on at left tackle. Mikulski should start at center, though it could also be Preston Wilson, but Wilson could play left guard, or that could be Jason Brooks or Cole Birmingham. I think the patchwork is perfect. You've got a bunch of different guys that can all start on this offensive line. None of them are awesome, and I can't ever quite figure out. It's like, it's nice that they can play different positions. It also means that no one's particularly great at any one position. The depth is there, like, yeah, but it's, if you're saying, like, we've got 7 to 8 guys who could all start on this offensive line, but your best offensive lineman's fine, like, what is that actually saying about your offensive line group? And I don't trust them to stay healthy. I don't. Like, at this point, I'm holding that against you. I don't believe you'll make it to the midpoint of the season with your seven best guys healthy. Like, you're going to lose two, if not three of them. So, like, I have OSU here. I would like to stop being pessimistic about Oklahoma State's offensive line, but they've got to give me a reason to stop being that way about it.
That's fair. Okay, so bottom two now. I actually, offensive line that played pretty well last year, but of course it came in the American Athletic Conference. I have Cincinnati here at 13. You know, they got a lot of newcomers. This is one of the schools I was talking about before where it's like, okay, you just don't know much about this offensive line. The only returning starter they have is Gavin Gerhart at center, who honestly did not look great at center last year. Then they have a new left tackle in John Williams, who only played like 40 snaps last year for them. And honestly, on those snaps, didn't look great either. But the guys I'm pretty excited about, Luke Kandro, the guard, right guard coming in from Louisville. I actually really like him a lot. And I think he's going to be a guy that could really be the anchor of this offensive line for them, be the guy that you say, okay, that, you know, we at least can trust Luke on that right guard spot. And then DeAndre Buford transfers in from Kentucky, was solid-ish at Kentucky as mostly like a backup offensive lineman last year. He's a decent run blocker, got to work in pass protection, but he should be the right tackle for them. And then they got a new left guard in Trevor Radicevich, who comes in from Penn, who, again, you know, you're projecting a guy going from the FCS level, I believe, to the Power 5 level. And you say, okay, maybe even if he was good at Penn, you know, what is that going to look like against Big 12 defensive linemen? So, yeah, a lot of unknowns on this offensive line that actually played pretty well last year. But I do like Luke Kandro enough to not be the worst offensive line in the Big 12.
Did they not have Dylan O'Quinn back?
I don't believe so. I don't see it. No, I don't see it on their depth chart, at least. Maybe they missed him.
That's not good. Yeah, I have, so 13. I feel better about this now after hearing some of that about Cincinnati, about whom I didn't have very many notes. I have TCU 13. I think that Coleman and Coker are good tall guards that are playing tackle. When they played teams that could rush the passer, they did not look very good. That team really got bailed out so many times by Duggan being such a great scrambler and legitimately fast guy. Their interior was a huge part of their success. Their interior was gutted. Avila is gone. Ollie is gone. Brockermeyer, I've heard, is not likely to do much in college football. Maybe that's wrong, but I heard one person that suspected that he was kind of like, that was like a favor to the family and to the community to bring in like a Fort Worth guy, and that there's not much hope that he'll actually play. I don't know if that's true or not. If that's wrong, don't throw that in my face. I'm not the origin of that. But he didn't do anything at Alabama, that's for sure. And if he still had much juice in the squeeze, you wouldn't think that Alabama would let him away, you know? It's not like, I mean, as talented as they are on offensive line, it's not like they've been like they had to bring in a Vanderbilt transfer left tackle last year. And he was like, okay. And then that guy graduated. So I don't think Brockermeyer is going to save their bacon. I'm suspicious about Lance converting at center. I think there's a chance that TCU is not particularly good on the offensive line, especially if they face more passing downs and they don't have Duggan bailing them out. So I'm shorting them big time, but I'm not going to short them as low as Cincinnati.
Well, I have Cincinnati at number 13. I think, Max, you hit all the points. I mean, you have a new coaching staff, you have a new offensive line coach, and a whole bunch of new starters. I'm also interested in Kandra. Buford should be a good transfer for Kentucky. It's just too big of question marks. I have no idea when you take new coach, almost entirely new offensive line, you bring back Gerhardt and he was not great. It's not the worst to me, because I have too many questions to say no, it's bad. But there's a reason they're 13th. I have no idea what to expect from this offensive line. And I mean, it's nice to know that it feels pretty good to know who the starters are, but I don't know. I don't know. This is the biggest mystery to me is Cincinnati, which is the only reason they're not last place. So that brings us to our last place. At this point, I feel like we know who they are. Max, who's your 14?
Yeah, I have, I think I have Iowa State here at 14. And, you know, this is an offensive line that did struggle last year. They do bring back a good amount of production from last year. But again, this is an offensive line that really did struggle to both protect the quarterback and generate any movement in the run game, really. So, yeah, I got Iowa State here at 14. Again, they could take a step forward with some returning starters coming back. But otherwise, I mean, it should be, again, a pretty rough year for the Cyclones, at least in the front five.
Cincinnati, almost by default, I feel like I didn't even know. I've had trouble figuring out who their starting lineup is going to be. You guys had much more luck researching that than I have. I don't know. They're a team that them and UCF are teams that could make us look a little bit silly here. Well, not me. I had UCF pretty high, but you guys for sure. Because they have running, they have good quarterback runners at quarterback. They're going to do a lot that's going to make their offensive line's life easy. So I think there's a chance that Cincinnati will make this ranking look bad. Whereas Iowa State last year, best tight end got hurt in fall camp. Quarterback was not really a runner. Didn't have a very good running back. Couldn't run the ball. There was nothing to help those guys out at all. Ideally your offensive line sets the table. But in the Big 12, most of these offensive lines don't really do that. There's probably we've named, I think, 10 decent offensive lines and maybe 4 good ones, right? Most of these lines are they can maybe reliably do the job if the quarterback or some of the skill talent will do the heavy lifting for them. And so I think Cincinnati might be a group that can fit into that paradigm rather than being like just a straight up bad line. But for all that, I have them last.
I think that's fair. I have Iowa State last. The best things I can say are Jared Hufford at left guard could be better, could be a bright spot. And his new offensive line coach, Ryan Clanton, saying he wants his linemen to play with quote unquote bad intentions. Biggest thing with Iowa State is not just that they weren't good last year and frankly have been okay during the entire Campbell era, is like everybody I've talked to is like, you can't name a starter. Like, you have guys we think are going to start based off of experience in last year, but with the new offensive line coach, like, the way it's being treated is he's coming in and treating it like we're starting from square one, day one. So, like, it's almost the biggest mystery of just, like, we don't even, I'm not even saying left guard, Hufford playing there, like, he might be, or he could be a right guard, it may not play, I don't know. And history tells me, I would say its offensive line's not great. We don't know who's playing quarterback with the rumors that are circulating as to whether or not that they will come true. So who knows with that? They should be better at running back. And Iowa State usually has like one good receiver. Please name them for me because I don't know who it's supposed to be this year. Like, I don't know. History tells me they're going to need some time to get new offensive line coach in there, getting things set up to be successful.
Sometimes, though, like, it just turns on a dime.
Yeah.
This is what makes college football, like with Grimes at Baylor. Although Grimes had just sent a guy to just convince the NFL that Zach Wilson was a top five pick. So Northern Iowa guy doesn't quite have that kind of resume. But
he's got a couple guys that got drafted from Northern Iowa. So, you know. And they're...
You know what? What's funny with Iowa State is I feel like they schemed a lot of their success recently and they had a couple talented skill players. And then their talent ran dry last year. And so they had nothing to scheme around. And then they pushed out the schemer and promoted the recruiter to be the new offensive coordinator. Now, I don't know the internal workings of the Iowa State staff, but that just struck me as being kind of funny. It's like, well, Nate Shielhazy, however you say his name, is like now our offensive coordinator. He's been our recruiting guru. And it's like, well, it sounds to me like he's got some questions to answer. Because where is the talent? There's no talent on this roster. What was the other guy supposed to do? I'm very curious to see how Iowa State plays this year.
When it's all about developing under-recruited guys, like if you miss, it kills you. It absolutely kills you. And for a program that just doesn't use the portal the same way everybody else does, it puts that much more emphasis on internal development and finding the diamonds in the rough. And if they don't develop the way you need or you miss on one, it kills you. All right. So to wrap this up, I think tiers make a lot of sense because it helps us understand that, like, well, how could you put this team this low? It's like, yeah, but it's interesting to see, like, how close we're each grouping. So I tell you what, I will start here since I made you guys do this. I have four tiers. My tiers are Texas, Kansas State, and West Virginia 1, 2, 3 in my tier one, kind of by themselves. I think it's not just the combination of I feel really good about the entire offensive line. It's you've got a piece on it as well that is a gem or two that makes me go, this sets you above everybody else, because not only do I feel good about your line, I feel good about this guy is going to be the best at his position group, and I don't have questions about your offensive line. My tier two is Oklahoma, Kansas, and Baylor. Either you have an Oklahoma who doesn't have a guy but is consistent across the board, or you have enough guys and a guy, maybe just one question in Kansas and Baylor, that I say, okay, I feel confident that you can fit into a tier two. Tier three, I've got Houston, BYU, TCU, UCF, and Texas Tech. It's a big tier because there's just not enough there between those five teams to separate them out. They're all very close to me. And I do think there's a decent gap between two and three. Not as big a gap as there is 1 to 2, but 2 to 3, I think there's a decent gap. And then there's a big gap down to tier four, which is Oklahoma State, Cincinnati, and Iowa State, in which case I don't have a lot of confidence in you, and you're going to have to give me reason to have confidence in you, because You don't have a singular bright spot on that offensive line. You've got too many questions for me. We'll see if you can have a good year. Max, how do you have yours tiered out?
Yeah, so I actually, when I was making my list together, I was like crossing off the teams one by one. So I just deleted my entire list. So I have to remember how I ordered these teams right now. But at number, I'll say the tier one for me is probably Texas and West Virginia. I think those are the two that I would say are the quote unquote elite offensive lines in the Big 12. Whereas I think everyone else at least has, you know, some other issues. And then that second tier, I probably put Kansas State, Oklahoma, and probably Baylor and BYU, honestly, too, into that tier too, where, again, like you mentioned before, it's just, you know, some of them have absolute superstars like Kansas State does and Cooper Beebe, but, you know, elsewhere, even though they return five starters, there are some issues elsewhere in that offensive line. Oklahoma solid across the board. Baylor always well coached and got some really good players coming in. And BYU, again, could have a couple really good players, and Kingsley Sumatia could be the highest drafted out of any of the offensive line that we talked about today. So that I would say is probably my tier two. And then I believe after that, I put UCF, Houston, and probably TCU into that tier three. Again, they have guys that you can hang your hat on, but some issue, more issues across the board on those offensive lines. And then I would probably say after that, you got your Oklahoma States, you got your Cincinnati's, Iowa State's. That probably be my next tier after that is, you know, those are the schools that I expect to have the worst offensive lines. I probably put Houston. I don't think I mentioned them. Houston probably be in tier two as well. But yeah, those are probably the ones I say, okay, those are the ones I have issues with. There are some bright spots that you can maybe say, okay, maybe this can improve. Maybe this guy can break out, but otherwise it should be not much expected from those offensive lines.
All right. Ian, how do you have yours separated out?
I've got three tiers.
Okay.
Tier one, go win us the game. Texas, Kansas State, Oklahoma, West Virginia. Tier two, just do your jobs. Baylor, Oklahoma State, BYU, Houston, Texas Tech, Central Florida, and Kansas. Tier three, please don't kill us. Cincinnati, TCU, Iowa State.
Okay. I like it. Very good. You guys have been awesome today. I really appreciate your time. And I know it took a lot of work to break these down. It is not easy. So everyone can remember, I know we mentioned it at the beginning, but I want to make sure it's reiterated here. Ian, where can everybody check out the work you do covering Texas and college football in general?
I cover Texas at InsideTexas.com. Check out my Substack. Cover all of college football. It's called America's War Game.
And Max, same question, man.
Yeah, so you can follow me at pff.com where all my articles are, Twitter and TikTok even, Max Chadwick CFB, and then also Preferred Walk-On is the show where I host a lot of players come on for interviews, and you know we got Kings Sumatia on there, Cooper Beebe's on there, and a bunch of other guys too. So yeah, you can check out Preferred Walk-On on YouTube and anywhere you get podcasts too.
Again, thanks guys. This was a lot of fun. We will review this after the season. I'm sure nothing will be incorrect. We'll all be somehow correct, even though we were all very different. Can't wait for the season, guys.
Podcast Network.